Hi, Tim.
Hi, Lainey.
Very exciting to do the first In Conversation with Tim Brett Day.
The legend.
The legend that is, I'm supposed to say
Yeah,
that.
no.
But actually, in truth, bit of a legend.
In Acton.
No, beyond Acton, don't play yourself down. So in 2000, I think it must have been, I was one of the founders of an agency called ISIS, which you will
I remember it
remember.
well. Yeah.
Remember it well. And it was in the days where we didn't have, we weren't using mobile phones. We had like one computer in the whole agency. So the success of the agency was judged on how often the phone rang. And the real success of the agency was judged on when Tim Brett Day rung for two reasons. One, because he's a great chatter, which you'll see over the next half an hour or so, but also because it was ka-ching, ka-ching. So you obviously come from a background of the last of the photographers trained on analog, where everyone was on analog, but also shooting a lot of fashion and portraiture and everything else. And now we're very lucky, well, I'm very lucky to be working with Jewel at JG Contemporary on selling some of your archive pictures, some of which we can see behind us. And that's what I want to chat to you about because they're fabulous. And we've just done a very beautiful exhibition called Nostalgia. And some of the pictures are here, and there are some new ones as well, which we want to speak about. But I would love to start by speaking to you about Tallulah's dreams behind you. I know that Tallulah's the name of your daughter. I'd like to hear more about the inspiration behind these dreamy, fairy-like pictures.
Well, they're a bit Grimm's fairy tale. I mean,
Yeah.
they've got definitely got a dark side, which probably get cancelled now. But they were done because I was away all the time on trips and stuff. Whenever I used to come back, Lula used to go, "I don't want stories like, the classics. I don't want Cinderella and all that kind of thing. Make something out of your head." So I just made up stories that were about a really mischievous little girl, never did what she was told. He was really naughty. Don't know where I got the inspiration for that. And yeah, and I just used it. Actually, it was really nice because I just went off on a. That was the first real solo project thing that I did just for myself. I just did it for Tallulah. And that actually gave me a, I wasn't doing it for a client. I wasn't doing it to be a success or for a magazine or anything. I just did it for her. So it was really personal. And something I've thought a lot about recently is I don't think I'm not one of those people that takes pictures that are deeply emotional, instantly emotional, like you get this feeling you get to know the artist. To be honest, I don't really want anyone to get to know the artist. I'd rather they looked in the picture and found lots of tiny details and worked me out that way, or worked out what I was trying to say that way. Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's quite interesting because when I look now at art photography, I'm having come from fashion, I don't generally like pictures with fashion in.
No.
I'm a bit more, except for yours, because I think that they sit in a time and a place, and but also they're timeless as well as sitting. So, for example, the one with the birds behind you, I'm not sure if the camera can see that as well. She's in that beautiful dress.
Yeah.
But it's utterly timeless. So I would buy that picture. I think it's really beautiful. And also here in the doll's house. That doll's house, how did that work, that picture? I mean, obviously there's a load of girls in the
Yeah.
doll's house.
It's see, that was a little story about that. There's about six of them, I think, and it's all about this very beautiful little princess girl, and she's told not to touch the doll's house, and of course she does, and she opens it up, and there's a live tarantula in there that we filmed.
What, a real one?
Yeah, a real tarantula. There it is.
Wow.
There she is.
Well, so you hired a
And
tarantula to shoot the
yeah, for the
pictures.
day. In fact, it was a very strange
That's
house
so
down.
twisted of
Yeah,
you.
no. Well, we went to Heathrow. And we got to this house, and I'm thinking, I was expecting Dracula's castle. And it was just like a little, council estate in Heathrow. Went in, and the woman was like, "Oh, do you want a cup of tea and a bourbon?" And then she said, "Oh, I'll get some of the animals out." And then we went round the house, and the house was just full of giant snakes, tarantulas, all kinds of weird stuff. And there was a picture we took of her daughter holding a great big Burmese python in the front room, but like next to the belling fire, with pictures of Nan and Grandad at them on the
Brilliant.
outside. And the nice things we used that when we did the opening, which was in Poland Street, I put the tarantula in a little jar, in the window next to the doll's house, And I thought, oh, that's great. And all day long, couldn't keep the bloody thing still. I was thinking, oh, Christ. And as soon as everyone arrived for the show, it just stood still and everyone kept going, is that a real tarantula? Are you sure? And I kept going, and it just wouldn't move. I wasn't going to stick my finger in and prod it around. But I like that kind of, yeah. I did like the Grimm's fairy tales. When I grew up, I'm that old, I used to sit on my mum's lap and watch with mother. And every now and again, they'd have this show from Eastern Europe called The Singing Ringing Tree. And it was really dark. It was never just about the beautiful princess kisses.
There was an edge.
It turns into a bear. It was all about, no, she fell in love with the bear. And it was all, and it was really eerily shot and really strange and really dark. And I think probably a bit weird saying that about your own kid, but I kind of wanted to have that. I didn't want to do something Disney. I wanted it to be, you know, I like that whole.
But they are weird, but they're not scary. I mean, the wolf in the bed. So talk to me about Red Riding Hood. Well, is that a wolf?
But that weird thing was I was shooting Westwood, I think down there for the Sunday Telegraph. And we had this Westwood dress. And I thought, oh, while we're there, can we just do a little picture from a project with Charlie Davis, who was the fashion editor at the time. And weirdly enough, the lady who owns Dorney Court, which is this insane house, you know, proper Scooby-Doo, moving eyes.
Is this where you shot The Agent Provocateur as well?
One of the Agent Provocateur, was shot down there.
Yes.
Yeah. And the house is nuts. And Jill, who owns it, is like one of the last bastions of English aristocracy, completely eccentric. And she said, oh, why don't you, if you're doing Red Riding Hood, do you need a wolf? And I went, well, yeah, if you've got one, I'm thinking, what's she going to do? And her brother actually had, I think he had 60 wolves. And he came down. I mean, obviously the wolf is shot in the bed separately to the girl. It was shot with the hairdresser within the bed when we shot her. And then they took the model out, and then the guy turned up with the wolf. We put the wolf in the bed.
So they thought the hairdresser was less valuable than the model, so you put him or her in with
you know, I wouldn't have one of my assistants going in there. No offence to any hairdressers, by the way. Love hairdressers. They've all got a kind of, and they all had a little bit of a backstory. Like Jill's house was really haunted, and there's a lot of tragedy in the family. It's one of those families that just
holds it in the walls, quiet, isn't it?
You know, their toilet was full of pictures of all the kids that had gone to Eton, and the mum and dad and grandparents and went right. But they'd all died. Everyone you looked at, you go, oh, that's John, that's my third uncle. Oh, he died in a plane crash. And, fell into a volcano. Or, oh, you got eaten by a boa constrictor. Everyone had some kind of weird, dark side to it. And the same, I shot in a house in Fournier Street as well, you know, near Bethnal Green. Mm. And I went there to shoot something, and the house was lovely. And I thought, I'll go back. And it was like, really was like Dickensian. And when I went back, he'd broken up with his wife. And the house, it had just had the darkest atmosphere. The picture with the mice is shot in their bedroom. And the house just had a really, I quite like that tragicness. And a lot of the stories, there's one where she's told not to go into the room and she gets eaten by a giant alligator. Mr. Alligator Head, it's not on this set.
Yeah.
And she sees this guy every day going down the stairs. And he's got a top hat on, but he's got an alligator head. Crocodile Head, so Mr. Crocodile Head. And he keeps going, but you can do whatever you like, but don't go in my room. Of course, she ends up going in the room. And when she gets in there, I shot these crocodiles. And I had this giant crocodile, and I stuck the crocodile in Photoshop, just about read that, into the room. So it was all, and, you know, as she goes up the stairs, there's loads of snakes under the stairs. So it was all kind of like...
Has this been made into a book, though? Have they actually been made into...
No, it should be.
Well, it definitely should be.
Yeah, it was... There's a big picture we did with Lee McQueen, which was the Battle of Fournier Street, which was all... I'd seen... It was one tree full of magpies and one tree full of parakeets. And I liked the idea. And they turned up with the whole collection was black except for one dress. And I thought, well, I'll use the one white dress as king of the magpies and then have all the other dresses. Had all the girls on harnesses hanging down from the ceiling and giant wind machines blowing everything. And put those together. So there was a battle scene. And It was just, yeah, it was just pure fantasy.
You're not afraid of a scene, are you? I mean,
no.
You know, the animals, the amazing houses, that I'm now going to come on to the agent provocateur.
Oh,
so
right.
This is one of four that we're selling. And Tim can tell us a little bit of, I mean, these are part of our nostalgia series. And they really are nostalgia now, because obviously they really communicated the brand and such an iconic brand, and putting that many models in one image and the entire collection apparently in each one.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, nostalgia had witches, which was easier to explain. But, you know, for me, it was always a jobbing day, and photography's always been a bit like that. I'm not that into creating something for the sake of it. So you'd shoot 25 outfits, I think, for Agent Proctor. And we'd have one suit, like Karen Elson in one, Helena Christensen in another. There were celebrities in each one. Daisy Lowe features in one of them. But you'd have to get all the outfits in. You know,
yeah,
absolutely.
And looking good, because you're trying to sell from it.
Yeah, and you're selling. If you're, you know, there's a girl in there diving into a barrel, and it's because they wanted the back detail on the underwear. So it was all, and it was very methodical. Jess and people like that, you know, would be product, think of it like this.
Yeah.
The lovely bit with it, I mean, I remember we did the first one, Witches, and I had this sort of idea about, well, Joe and I really talked about doing Rocky Horror Show. He loved Hogarth's Rake's Progress. Yeah. So I said, look, let's just do like that, you know, have all these lots of little scenarios. Each one had a riddle going with it. And we went down to Dorney Court, and the pictures, cameras locked off, shot the right-hand side, with all the girls in one set of underwear. While they were getting the hair and makeup change, he shot everyone individually. They went off, and then all the staff, snake wranglers, assistants, some mates of Joe's who were doormen, some punks we'd met in Windsor. We chucked everybody in, shot that bit. The camera never moved. And then they all came back and we shot the left-hand side. So I've always thinks it's like an amazing, you know, combination. The artistry of a guy, I work with a guy called Lee Stewart all the time. And Lee just got me, and I don't think I ever had him go, if I said, you know, oh, can we make a 30-foot crocodile come out of a cupboard? He'd be like, yeah, all right. He was just very matter-of-fact about it all.
So what's also interesting to me about this is you'd be less likely to think of this now because of social media, and you're thinking about putting things into a tiny square. I mean, obviously, there'd be a lot you could do around it, but it's so, I mean, that doesn't fit in a tiny square, really.
No, it doesn't.
You know, it doesn't have its impact. And actually, it really works communicated as a piece of art now to hang on the wall. And I guess you weren't necessarily thinking of that at the time. You
know? I mean, at the time, they were fold-out posters that went in, I think they went in 10, another magazine. They were all really good magazines. And you know, I'd never taken, anyway, I mean, I think I was very lucky when I worked with them, because it was Joe and Serena who were the founders. And I worked with them right from the very, very start. I think Bob Carlos Clark, who I really love, did the first couple of playing cards. But then, I just seemed to take over and do the playing cards. I did one campaign. People don't realise how many I shot for them.
But you are then integral to us all wanting that pink and black box.
Yeah,
that was like the most covetable thing to have.
Yeah, I understood the luxury element. I've always said that I had, when I said to Joe, look, the thing that really worried me at the time, there was a big culture of lads magazines like Loaded and things like that, which, you know, fine. But I kind of went, I never look at women like that. So I related a story to him about being in the Wimpy Bar when I was 16, working in a Wimpy Bar, and had a mad crush on this girl called Susan Brown. She used to come in every day, and I'd just sit there like, you know, delirious looking at her. And one day she ordered a Knickerbocker Glory, and I went, this one's mine, I'm getting in here. And I made this Knickerbocker Glory, took it over, and I think I stood there for about a minute and a half. And then eventually she looked at me and said, something wrong with you? Do you want a photo or something? And that whole feeling, and I just walked away feeling like humiliated and thought, that's the feeling I want. And I think, weirdly enough, that stuck with me. I think Serena had the thing of when you used to go to the shop, it get cancelled, you know, but when you went to the very, very shop, there was always this thing that had this staircase, and the girls would walk up the stairs in their underwear, you know, you could see everything. And it used to intimidate the crap out of you. And a bit like his dad's, you know, first few shops, like Boy and Sex Seditionaries, there was always that little feeling of like, I shouldn't really be, especially as a boy, I should not be in here. But it was, I'm not going to go into empowerment too much, but it was a real, what are you looking at?
Mm.
It had that, I always wanted it to happen. I never wanted it to be like, oh, I'm sexy, yeah. You know. It was always a bit of a kind of...
With a humour as well.
Yeah.
There's a charm and a humour in all of
it. I'd like to think so. I think it was... and it had a bit of a rock... You know, Joe and Serena are very rock and roll.
Yeah.
Jess, all the people that work there. They're proper rock and roll
kids. You captured that essence.
Yeah, and
the time.
I always had that... I don't know if I was that cool, but they were, and I always had that little element of... just a bit of punk rock, dare I say that. You know, I think it was brilliant. Always a bit irreverent.
And tell me, like, the practicals on it, how many editions do you do of each of these?
No. Oh, that's a good question.
Is it 25? I think
it's changed to 15.
It's not many.
That size, we're not doing many.
It's not many, considering it's so iconic.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something you're going to repeat. And they're really,
Yeah.
They're running out.
And they're running out.
Good Christmas presents, I'd say.
Indeed. Absolutely. Go out to your local JG Contemporary.
Yes, Bio. Exactly.
They are collectible. And do you know what? I've done a book and all the things I've ever wanted. I've never really wanted, I don't want to sell thousands. I'm not interested. But I love it when a lady, I'm not sure if I can say her name, but she just bought three in New York. She bought all three, the big ones. And I loved it because she's obsessed. There's a few people in New York who love the brand, know everything about it, want to know all the details. And I like that.
It does have that essence, though, the brand, doesn't it? I think the fun, the rock and roll,
the
time of it. And there wasn't anything else like that.
And I don't think there could be, maybe it's coming back that time, because I think if it isn't treated, you know, I think with sex and all these kind of things, it's a ridiculous thing at the end of the day. I mean, the whole thing of it is, I find it a very hard thing to take that seriously. And I don't. And then maybe when I look back on it, I think, oh, is that right? Is that, and I'm sure there's moral dilemmas all over the place about it. But I'm still great friends with everyone on Facebook and Instagram. And if you were an agent provocateur girl, and there's loads that become, you know, photographers, you know, gone and done loads of other things, because they were just girls that we, you know, the Olivia Lings, the Jen Dawsons, you know, all of them.
Yeah, there's a bravery in
it. Yeah, there was a spirit in it.
Like,
can you swing off this? Can you carry this snake? Can you?
Yes, I'm being asked by Tim to carry the snake or the tarantula.
Exactly. It was just a bit of
theatre.
Yeah, a bit of theatre.
Still theatre.
I think models get bored standing in front of white coloramas and kind of going, you know, being clothes horses. I think they all felt a little bit like.
And there's a tribalism to it. And I think that's also what makes the image interesting, because it is a tribalism of the time. Like, I remember girls being agent provocateur girls, you know, and later girls were Victoria's Secret girls in America. And it didn't have the rock and roll, though.
It didn't.
This is this British essence that's...
They used to ring me every year and call my book in and never book me. And I used to be like, why don't I get booked for that one? And it obviously was just that, you know, at the times, I know, like with Witches, I remember... Joe was doing Rake to Progress. I was thinking a bit Rocky Horror Show. And I said, we used David Bailey's son, Fenton, who was a brilliant sport, and this other girl. And we did the bride and groom, you know, wander into this witch's coven by mistake and get sacrificed, which probably doesn't sound great on paper. But it was just that let's break for you. And I do remember walking in and putting this big print up on the wall and everyone just going, oh, my God, what have you done? And Joe nonchalantly walked in, I think, with an Eccles cake or something, and went, it'd be really great if I had a big pentagram in the front, wouldn't it? And I promptly went back to the studio, painted a great big pentagram on the floor, photographed it. That's one of the few things that's comped in, along with an owl and a wolf. There's a wolf, which we would have attacked them if we
Can we discuss your references to the Eccles cakes and the biscuits? Because you did say to me the other day, you were annoyed that clients kept trying to invite you to posh lunches and dinners at Scott's.
Know,
and you're
like
all I want is a biscuit. Yeah. I want a jammy dodger and a cup of tea.
I've always struggled with that thing of, you know, people say to me, let's meet in Soho House. I've got nothing against going to say. It's just not, I mean, I'd rather go to Maison Umberto over the road, you know, the Greek Street one, where it's an old, there's a bit of history and there's, I like eccentrics. I do. I love the lady that runs the place. The Eccles cake keeps coming up because my first ever, just telling the story, this is the truth.
I can't avoid picking up on it because there is often a discussion around a tea and a biscuit, maybe a Battenberg as well.
Oh, I like a Battenberg.
Yeah, I know.
The Eccles cake is My first ever job assisting someone, it was down at Heathrow, and where I started out as a paparazzi photographer. And I went into this photographer's studio and he went, right, I've got to pop out for an hour. Could you just give the studio a tidy up? I've never assisted anyone or done anything like that. So I tidy up and I'm looking on the side and I think, oh, it's an Eccles cake. And I ate it. I just thought, I love Eccles cakes. They're great. And I ate it. And he came back about an hour later and he went, right, we've got to shoot this bloody Eccles cake for this La Express.
Oh, no.
Do you know where it is? And I just sat there and lied, blatantly lied, just going, no, haven't seen it. We went through the bins and everything. I was just sitting there.
Must be a mouse in the house.
Never eat food on sets. I learned my lesson.
Yeah. Well, so we did the other show, After Nostalgia, and we've got a couple more images, which I hope, I'm not going to get up to show them now on the screen because I hope that we'll be able to comp them in. But I love that image where you've got the people in the sitting room kind of snogging and hanging out, and it kind of looks like a sort of dirty boxing day. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I need to understand more, but I love the image.
I think that's, I mean, that's again, it. I've always, if I work with the right person, Joe and Serena, I think we are, I definitely think, you know, they might disagree, but I don't think so. I think we had a kind of magic. I love Joe because I think he broke all the rules. He was completely irreverent and he could be really difficult. We had a few arguments, let's let that be said, but he'd always want to take it further. And Carl Templer, who I worked with, that picture was for The Face. Mm-hmm. Carl,
What year is The Face?
Oh, I have no idea.
Sort of 2000s early, or something.
Yeah, some earlier than that, I think, 90 something. And he'd get this, there was a page called Hype. And everyone else would get Hype and go shoot a model on a white background. And Carl would always turn up and go, right, I need to get 35 models or we're going to throw paint all over everyone.
And only Tim could do it.
Me that would get them. And that one was exactly the same. And we had to shoot it that night. He had all the clothes in the office. We cast in the office in the morning, got, I think it was 7 or 8 models. I think we were actually more on the night. Loads of people turned up. We went to this deserted room in Holborn studio, which was, again, whimsical. We were supposed to shoot in the studio. I went, oh, let's shoot here. A bit like where we are now.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll get some furniture. And Carl could just get things from everywhere. I always remember he got the painting of the girl, the Bridget Bardot thing was from the Duffer of St. George. Everyone turned out, he got takeaway training. Then he suddenly decided he wanted a giant TV screen, which it was at that time. And that turned up and he went, oh, I've just got popped to Soho and get some porn. And he came back and put the porn on the screen. So they're all eating Chinese and all snogging and just hanging out. But that's how I did a trip to Miami, which was, we went with Polly Banks and Nancy Rode, and I broke my arm.
You broke your arm?
Yeah, I broke my arm about a week before going on the shoot. When are you going to be all right? Yeah, I'll be fine. And we went out, hadn't cast anyone, and we went to clubs the first 3 nights, and we asked all the people, oh, can you come to this deserted swimming pool down on the beachfront in Miami and just bring whatever, you know, your favourite things? And people turned up with snakes and all kinds of weird as shit. And some real scary kids, you know, turned up with guns and all that. And Carl just had this energy that it was just like, no, we're going to get this. This is great. Oh, we get everyone in. And it was complete madness, you know.
Brilliant.
And we shot all these people. And I love the chaos. I mean, I think all the agent provocateur things were utter chaos. There was, quietly everyone was doing it. But I know Helena was like very, very sensible. I absolutely love her. I think she's a great girl. Amazing photographer. Mm. But she was a bit of a superstar and she turned up and there was all these people there. She didn't know what was going on. And I always loved, my favourite story about that picture is actually that the guy who's the pirate captain has got a map of the, ye olde map of the world tattooed on his chest. And I think he was a plasterer. I don't know where he came from. But we saw him and went, oh, can you just turn up? He said, oh, what do you want me to do? And I said, you're the captain of the ship. And Helena's girls are all stealing these keys off you and feeding them to monkeys who take them up the ropes and steal all the treasure. And he's just, yeah, okay. He said, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, this model's going to come and sit on your lap and she's going to steal the key off you. And Helena walks out and she's a bit like, okay, what do you want me to do? Kind of, I explained to what she's going. So she sat on his lap. He's just sitting there like loving every minute of it. And she goes, okay, I need to know where would a pirate hide his key?
And
this,
yeah,
this guy just went in his pants like that. And of course, the whole crew pissed themselves laughing. And Helena, I'm not sure she laughed, but I don't know if she was quite
on for that.
Ready, yeah, but she was. She was always, I think she's one of those people that took it all. She's very, very comfortable.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, imagine if today you started telling someone the key was in the pants.
Yeah.
And everybody was fine, weren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, yeah, I always got that impression.
Yeah.
You know, Olivia Ng, there were just so many of the girls that you just worked with, Daisy Lowe. There were just loads of girls who just, and I think it also helped that Agent Provocateur did the best parties ever. They were always, I think people thought it was more rock and roll than it. But actually, maybe they were. Me, I was always sitting there thinking, we were always shooting in a location with no electricity, and I was always waiting for the lights to not work, and it was.
But that's what it is. Logistical nightmare. I think that we, you know, who aren't invited to the parties and aren't on the shoot, that the shoots give us a little look into what's going on.
Yeah.
And photography for me is, well, for everyone, it's that frozen moment in time. And I think when you put a load of chaos into the image, or not, you know, a lot of people and a lot of human energy, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
You kind of feed off that,
it's
and it has its
isn't
time.
It?
It's a performance, and it has its time going forward. So on the one in Holborn Studios, that's also for sale now. And the other one I want to talk to you about is that incredibly beautiful Kate Moss image. Now, I've never wanted an old Kate Moss image on my wall before, because we've seen her
so
much
beautiful,
that it's not a thing that I necessarily, but this was pre-Kate being famous.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I mean,
old was she? Yeah, I think it was about 1990. I think a few people, I think everyone that shot her just, it was weird. I think all the photographers got it, and we all knew. And I remember I'd shoot covers for like Marie Claire and things like that, and we'd shoot Claudia Schiffer, or we'd shoot, and they'd go, "Could we have some backup girls?" And I'd always try and get Kate on it, and it never worked. And I think she kind of lost faith in me, and I think she was a bit like, "Why did it never work?" And I'm like, "Look, it's names. It's just that thing." And I hung out a bit with her with Mario in New York
when Mario
just as she made it. And I always remember a magical day. He got his first shoot, I think it was with Joe McKenna. And I went up there to help him. And I don't know why. And I walked into this groovy studio. Oh, it was absolutely like, I was like, and he's there with his shirt off. He looked ripped up. He's shooting Kate. Joe McKenna was doing the stunt. And I thought, oh dear, I think my days are numbered. This is never going to happen. And she then, I tell you, it wasn't what everyone said, I don't think. I don't think it was like she walked in and became a star of night. She worked really hard.
Mm.
She was really determined. She gave 100%. I think in that picture, I'm not a big fan of saying now what I like about my pictures, but her eyes just looked at the camera.
Yeah. She's got that magical camera thing.
Yeah. The hairdresser, weird enough, who we did that for, didn't like her and said, "Oh, I'm not sure about it." We reshot it.
Have you asked him about it since?
No. And I think about 3 months later, I went, "That was a good idea using the other girl, wasn't it?" I said, "Why didn't you should have trusted me." But I think everyone always tries to make out they discovered her. And, you know, I think Kate discovered herself. I think, you know, Corinne, I was a massive fan of Corinne Days. I loved Corinne. I thought she was a brilliant photographer. But Kate was going to happen.
She was going to happen.
Yeah.
And against the odds, because of course at that time.
At that time,
girls were sort of Amazonian and very typical, you know, and she was 5'7"
or character, something. Didn't she?
But she had that magic in front of the camera.
She always told, she said something to me, and unless I've got it wrong in my memory, but she shot with Mizell that week she shot with Mario. And she said, it's taken off. I'm just getting booked. So I said, "What happened?" So she said, "Well, funny enough, I was in Stephen Mizell's hair and makeup room, and apparently Tamara went, 'You're kind of short, aren't you, like that?' And she said, 'Well, you booked me, you better make me look good then.'" And apparently it was one of those things, I think Mizell's one of those people where it could go either way. And he kind of...
He went, "Oh, I like the
quirky
attitude,
English girl, you know, with a load of attitude," which she had. I've got nothing but respect for her. I think she's... there's so many great pictures. I mean, I think all the Merton Marcus stuff.
Yeah.
Loads of stuff. She shot with Ian Thomas. And Ian Thomas died very, very young. He definitely would have... It was about that time, and I think Ian Her had a magic relationship. I thought he took great pics of her, but sadly wasn't around long enough for that to turn into anything else.
And so tell me something. If you shoot now, are you shooting art or are you shooting for clients? I mean, or is it purely about the archive now?
I'm going to shoot myself in the foot, I know. But
it doesn't matter what you say.
It's never
it's
art.
All...
I never see it like that. I see it as, I would say now, I'm much more determined to shoot what I want to shoot than I used to. But I was always very accommodating. I mean, I had that history of working for magazines. I'd always be an editor at the other end of the phone going, "Can you shoot it differently or something? Or, you know, is that right?
Is the dress showing in the right angle?
And I think when we had I think after lockdown, really, and lockdown, when it became behind the scenes and Instagram, TikToks, and hundreds of people in the shoot, and I just, people had lost the desire, which is one of the sad things of, let's find the best picture. You know, good photographers work and work and work and work, and then can't find it. And then just as the girl's walking back to the van, go, that's the shot.
That's the shot, yeah.
You know, no one's interested in that.
But even in the magazines, you know, you'd buy the magazine and you'd see a shoot that was beautiful and you need to keep looking at it, you know, like listening to an amazing song. You'd have to look at it 20 times, you know. And I can think of, you know, maybe 15 shoots where I've done that with, and I'd sort of cover the magazine and keep it there. And I think people don't put that value now because we have so much more imagery that's just,
it's content, shoot,
you know, it's that ADHD thing of content, and it's tiny like this, talking about how you probably wouldn't shoot that now because you've got to fit it in that little square. And
I mean, you spend the time, you know, I like, although, you know, I a lot of that is shot live. If you look in a lot of pictures, there's little frogs. We were printing one up yesterday, that pan one.
Yeah, the one we sold.
And there's a lamb in the corner, but I never noticed this other lamb. And then I noticed something else, and there's some mice. And I'm like,
this is the best thing about these. Every time you look at them, like, what is going on there?
And
Tim?
The riddles as well. You know, the riddles were, I think that one's about keys. I think there's seven keys, eight keys, seven are keys. And I'm not going to tell you the
clue. Look at it. There's even like a weeny little mouse in the corner that's the size of my fingernail in this large-scale image.
I love things like that.
Yeah, it's
fantastic. They're all, you know, that's the thing with working with Lee. It's one of those things, I think people think retouch is, you know, oh, it's a way of cheating. It's not, it's just a way of telling the story. Lee,
especially like this, because you're putting story in.
He'd spend time, you know. I think there's one that I looked at the other day and I was like, it was the last one, Sirens. And I blew this print up. I've never printed it up big. And we printed it up big for New York. And I found all these like bits of human bone and things like that. The idea is the sirens have eaten all these people they've lured in. There was like all the things are in this, like hyenas and vultures. And I'm thinking, and Lee would painstakingly cut out a vulture,
brilliant,
you know, and put them in and fit them in. And we did spend hours. We just, you know, that the main image would be there, but it'd be all afterwards. It'd be like, what can we get away with, you know? And
so it's not surprising these are art pieces now. I mean, it really isn't. Yeah. And there needs to be, I mean, I hope the tables turn a bit, because for me, photography is such an important art asset. And I think, you know, for people to shoot like that, it's less likely to happen on a mobile phone. It's less likely to happen. You know, you can capture a moment, yes. But I think that thing of when you were trained in a dark room, is a very different thing. And I see, you know, even with some of our photographers now who are shooting digital, you know, if you're shooting digital, but you've got the mentality of someone who started in a dark room.
Yeah.
It's a very, very different.
Well, I go back, definitely one of my biggest heroes, and no one ever heard of him, but it was a book called Walk Away Renee by Storm Thorgerson. And Storm did all the covers for 10cc, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd. And he was doing it all in camera on 10.8 transparency. So what people, and there's always a thing that always makes me laugh, oh, you've cheated, you did it in Photoshop. And I always remember reading Diana Vreeland's book, Allure, and she'd say how she'd shoot models. And she'd go, but darling, my friend Sid Charisse, the dancer from, you know, Singing in the Rain, that does the fantasy sequence and that, the surreal, she was a friend. So she'd get her in the evening and Dick Avedon would shoot the legs and then a retoucher would comp them on. So we've always been lying in as the cover of the glamour book, the long neck. She didn't have a neck that long. That's just...
Of course. I mean, there has to be something we aspire to. Yeah. We don't want to see the girl next door. In reality, we want to see something that's different, that's crazy, that's, you know, we're getting a window into another existence, whatever that is. Even if it's
funny enough, there was a nice time with that when I think girls had the allure of next door, probably had the Susan Brown thing of, do you want to feel like...
Sadly, I think Susan Brown was quite special, though.
To me, Georgina Cooper was one, you know,
who
passed away recently.
Who was one of our models at the agency that you used to call about.
And I met her and I just thought, she's just like one of my cousins. She's just like, she was just great. And that again.
That natural
That throws
soul.
You when they're not difficult, when it's not a... When someone, you know, I would say with Bowie, we shot Bowie and you're expecting this, oh my God, this could be a real difficult day with that. And the guy was just like... photographing Eric Morecambe. It was just funny. Turned up with one person on his own pretty much all day. And I, he was joking all day, and I just couldn't get my head around it. I kept going, is that a joke? And then because I just thought, he can't be this funny. And he was just really dry and sarcastic.
And how can you be as cool and be funny? That's not fair.
And I want to drop down to Wayne's World, you know, I'm not worthy. I think what the whole room did. The whole room was just in awe of him.
What did you shoot those images for?
It was for an album cover.
They're great.
Which was, I mean, it was so random. I shot Alan Edwards, who was his publisher. Alan Edwards is the king of publishing. He's just done Naomi's museum
thing
at the V&A. Real guy, real cool guy. And we shot Beckham and had a really, when Beckham was absolutely 1999, and Beckham was at the height of it all. And he went, look, we might have paparazzi, you might have this. Can you handle that? Went, yeah, I mean, because actually most things just go over my head. I don't actually notice what's going on. And we had a really cool day with him. We shot someone else, which was different. I think Jerry Halliwell or someone who, it was a difficult cover for the Sunday Times. And he went, oh, you might get a call from someone. And I went home in the evening watching EastEnders in my pants with my wife.
Eating Eccles cakes.
No, it was beans on toast, actually. And the voice rang, and went, oh, I'm David Bowie. And I'm like, oh, yeah, so am I. And it went on to the point, it went, look, I'm going to say it once more, this is David Bowie. And I had no idea he was going to call. And he went, oh, I want to do an album cover with a reconstruction of the Pieta, Michelangelo, I think it is. And I didn't have a clue what it was. And my wife was on the other side of the room. This is pre-Googling everything, like with an art book, kind of going, Pieta, Pieta. And show me a picture. Oh, yes, of course, David, of course, you know. And it just went from there. And then you just end up doing a shoot with him. And I think we did like 10 setups in a day. Guy was just hilarious. That actually made me laugh all day. And I never thought I said a word to him. And then someone found a film, a behind-the-scenes film of it, and it was just like,
God, what, are you chatting?
Yeah, and we're just chatting away.
Well, you've forgotten the whole thing, like this moment, sort of frozen.
I just thought I was just complete. I think I just kept thinking, make sure your mouth's not going, you know, dropping down and not wearing to wear a bib. It was just that I was completely in awe of him. And I've never, only Stephen Gerrard, but that won't mean anything to you, as a footballer.
I know about footballers.
Okay. I was in awe of Stephen Gerrard. I couldn't look at Stephen Gerrard.
You got pictures of him?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you got the assistant to look through while it was set up.
No, it was. It's my worst photography story. Your worst nightmare was I shot him for Adidas. And we'd had a saga with Chelsea. We shot Chelsea. It took 6 weeks to shoot. Had to go to LA. Oh, it was so difficult. You can't imagine. It was like prima donnas, divas. They said, can you shoot Liverpool? My massive Liverpool fan. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to spend 6 weeks with the boys. And we went up to Liverpool and we went to some deserted rat-infested studio, set this set up.
That's very comfortable for you, isn't it? Well, a rat-infested studio. We're like, great, we've
got the props. I wanted longer. And everyone turned up. Pepe Reina, all these players were great. And he turned up and he was absolutely miserable. And I always remember, and no one knew why, I just went to, he just had his stag weekend. And I said, oh, hi, Steve. Oh, you've been in Edinburgh for your stag weekend. I said, where did your wife go for a hen party? And he did a complete Joe Pesci Goodfellas thing on me. I went, why? I went, I don't know. And he kind of, why are you asking me? What do you think I am? Why are you asking?
No.
He really did. He really went for
it. Was he taking the piss?
No.
Or did he keep
He was
the
absolutely serious?
Serious.
And I wanted to drop down on my knees. He goes, I sing your name on the terraces. Stephen Gerrard is our captain. It's, you know, I love you, Stephen. Please. I'm holding onto his leg.
I wasn't with
and
your
was
wife
so,
last weekend.
And, yeah. I don't know why it happened. And he just, every single picture, he's scowling at me. I was shooting kit pictures. He's scowling at me in every picture. And ironically, about 3 months later, we go to Anfield, and at the back of the cop, there's all these giant Adidas pictures, and all the pictures are like Pepe Reina smiling, Dirk Kuyt, and James
Is it all moody?
And Stephen Gerrard's just looking at you like he wants to punch you in the face. And I have no idea why.
I was
heartbroken.
Oh, if anyone knows him, let's find out.
Yeah, I've worked with him since, and he was great. He was really nice. I just caught him on the wrong day.
Okay, he'd had a big weekend. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think that kind of draws it in, and it's great. I love chatting to you. I can chat to you all day.
Unfortunately,
since 2000.
Tour for England, yeah.
Well, we both can.
Oh, no, it's great. Thank you very much. And Prince are on sale at JG Contemporary.
Prince are on sale at JG Contemporary. Well,
and
I mean, in all seriousness.
Weddings and bar mitzvahs, yeah.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, they are the best Christmas presents, as people are realising. So, Yeah, but hurry up because it's nearly Christmas. So if we want to print anything, we've got to do it quickly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enchanté.
Oh.